Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fogan. Today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. Tonight's author on tour is Andre DeBus III, who reads from and discusses his new book, The Garden of Last Days, published by W.W. Norton. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute. It's time to begin.
Good evening, and welcome to the Tattered Cover tonight. And thank you all for coming. And I want you to know we so appreciate your support of independent bookstores. And your being here and being our customer helps us do events like this. Well, we are very excited tonight to have Andre DeBus returning to the Tattered Cover with his much-anticipated new novel, The Garden and the Last Days, The Garden of Last Days. This page-turning story is set in Florida in early September 2001. It's a literary tour de force that brings four characters who, for reasons of ambition, wounded pride, fear, or desperation, delude themselves into thinking that the path they are on is the only possible path. Andre DeBus has also previously written the novel Blues Man, which we have over there, and The Cage Keeper, a short story collection. And, of course, I'm sure we're all still haunted by the wonderfully complex characters from The House of Sand and Fog, which received overwhelming acclaim, became the number one bestseller, became an award-winning film, and an Oprah book. Please help me welcome Andre DeBus.
Thank you, Marty. I'm going to read from Cosmos and Psyche. I just found it on the shelf. As we say, where I'm from looks wicked good. I am going to buy this after. Thank you for coming. I know you have other things to do, and I appreciate it. I'm going to read for like 16.2 minutes. My favorite part of coming out and meeting people on this book tour thing is really not to read to you, but to have a conversation afterwards. So maybe I'll just read a little bit and then spend 3 minutes telling you how I came to write this, and then let's have a conversation. If you'd like. If not, I'm going to call on you. So I don't stand up here just looking at you. You just need to know a couple of things. So the novel's set on the Gulf Coast of Florida in late summer 2001. In the opening scene, April, who's in her 20s and is a single mom, brings her three-year-old daughter to work because the lady who normally watches her can't. And her work, she's a stripper, and so the house mom is watching her three-year-old while she dances. Meanwhile, one of the men she dances for that night is a 26-year-old Saudi Arabian named Bassam, who has come to the west coast of Florida to do a financial errand. He has $16,000 on him. He saw April once, and he came back to see her one more time before his mission. The only other thing you need to know is in the scene I'm going to read from his point of view, something has happened at the club, and the cops are there interviewing all the male customers left in the club. So this is about... What's that? Oh, you're one of those. You like to go... If I get it wrong, don't tell me. Page 64. You can read along. Go ahead. Although I have to tell you, sometimes I've actually read in front of people, and I've quickly scanned it, and if I see too many elderly ladies, which is not fair, it's not fair to elderly ladies, my 87-year-old mother-in-law, she read this book. My point is, I'll take the F word out if I see just, or if there are kids, I'll censor myself. But now as you're reading along, I have to read all the F words. All right. This is April. Some nights it was like reaching into a bin full of apples. She didn't have to act like she loved them, just smile and curl her finger at them to follow when they did. One or two always needed encouragement, so she took their money, then guided them through the tables to the VIP, where all the easy chairs might be taken, and she'd have to wait till the number was through and somebody's customer got up to leave. The whole time she talked to him, smiling. It'd be hard to hear anything, so she'd have to let him put his wet mouth close to her ear, let him get that close, just so he could piss her off by asking her real name, like his 20 bucks entitled him to that, like he was the first to ever have the balls and the heart, he thought, to ask that. Most nights, April used the music and shook her head as if she hadn't heard. Other nights, she'd talk right through his question, ask if he wanted his private right there in the private darkness at the blue-lit entry to the VIP, just her and him in the shadows. Some nodded yes, their eyes already on her body. She'd never stop moving, because you should never stop moving. If you did, you were just standing there talking, your body getting cold, the beat and rhythm leaving your muscles. But worse than that, it was harder to stay spring if she stopped. If she stopped and started talking, it was too easy for April to come out, to be her, just April, standing there in a smoky club in a skirt and blouse talking when she wasn't here to talk and hated it whenever that's what a man wanted in the VIP. Why not stay home and talk to his wife? But if she just smiled and took their money and danced off her clothes, then she was spring. Breasts and flat belly, ass and thighs and long swinging hair and big smile. Every one of them could look and look at those, and she, April, could stay inside in that dark, quiet part of herself that wasn't here at all, had never been, was back home with her daughter, though tonight her Franny was in Tina's office, and as April danced now in the VIP for a fat man in a loosened tie, she was really with her baby on Tina's couch, the two of them eating ice cream and watching Ariel fall in love with a prince on land who would love her forever if only she'd come join him. April could feel how close Franny was, knew she had to go there soon before climbing back on stage for her second act. When she was spring and not April, it was always easier to harden herself to everything. The bend overs and come sit on this, some of the men's faces so drunk and lonely, their eyes mean and dead looking. But here in the smoky haze of the VIP under the dim light over the easy chair, this one kept smiling at her. He'd left his drink back at his table, and he kept smiling and smiling. A big, wide face with glasses and square teeth, his cheeks flushed, her skirt and blouse were off, draped over the chair arms in his lap where she liked to put them, make them feel they were special, so they sometimes tipped a five on top of the 20. And now her tee back. Other girls ripped free the Velcro all at once, letting themselves pop out sexy as toast from a toaster, saving their drama for their stage act. But not Spring. Spring had style all night long, and now she rocked her hips from side to side, let him watch her do it slowly till her tee back was loose and she held it there with her fingers, watched him look hungrily from them to her still-covered breasts to her face, then back to her fingers. And that's when she lifted her left hand and let that cup fall and dangle, her right breast still covered. And it was funny how they always looked at the naked one only a second or two, their eyes on her hand now, over her loosened cup, over the other. This music was good. A man's voice singing high and hurt, guitar strings whining. And why didn't they ever look longer at the naked one? Why was the covered one more interesting now? It sometimes made her wonder why they came here at all. Now the music changed, got harder and faster. The man's voice, full of so much longing, he was almost angry. She dropped her hand and let her bra fall open, pulling one arm out of it, then the other. She dropped it onto his knee. Silk pants, she noticed just now. Some money here. A banker or lawyer or bank's lawyer. The song was almost over, and it was time to give him bottoms, too. She let her body move to the song whichever way it wanted. She put both hands behind her neck, lifting her hair, bringing her elbows in slightly, swaying in time, though there wasn't much time left. His eyes were on her belly, flat as it always been. She could eat anything and never worry because she was always moving and never staying still. And this one was through with her breast and had moved on to the next hidden thing, his eyes on her crotch. There were only a few seconds left in the song, and when it ended, she'd have her 20 already and didn't have to do more. But this one had some cash. She could feel it, and it wouldn't take much. And she ran her fingers down along her ribs to her hips, hooking her thumbs into her G-string just as the number was ending. The singer's voice still lonely and riding out the last ringing guitar chord. And she noticed her customer was hard, something that usually happened with the young ones, but not the busy, busy men in the middle of their lives. This one with a short tent in his pants, her crotch close to his face. The song over now, but she showed him anyway. Pushed her G-string down till her arms locked straight, and she let him see the coarse hair there. She didn't trim as closely as the other girls because they didn't have what she did, a scar from Franny. Her baby pulled out of the cut they made there, then sewed up badly. Glenn sitting stoned on a stool. He never touched her, not a hand on her shoulder or forehead, just sat there in the scrubs they made him put on, his eyes dark pools above his blue mask. She pulled her G-string up and let it pop back into place. She smiled down at this fat banker with glasses, his shiny cheeks, though at this moment she didn't really care if he lived a long, happy life or died right there in that chair. She picked her tee back and skirt off his knee. The next number had started, and she was late, like to be dressed again before that, getting the clothes back on even more important than stripping them off. She stepped into her skirt and pulled it up, his eyes on her breast still. She laughed a night laugh and told him he was getting a freebie now, and if he wanted, she'd do this number for him, too. He didn't answer her, and he wasn't reaching for any extra to give her either, his pants still a tent, his silk pants full of cash he wasn't going to do the right thing with. She grabbed her blouse off the chair arm and put her back to him. She pulled on her tee back, snapped it closed, and walked fast out of the VIP thinking, fuck him, fuck him. But it was wrong to get pulled into any kind of emotion at all. It would throw off the whole night. Everything cool? Paco's voice floated briefly through the music and bar noise as she walked by him. She nodded and kept going. In the blue darkness at the half wall, she pulled on her blouse and buttoned it. On stage, a new girl was only a quarter into her song and had her top off too soon. The crowd calling out things. A lot of young men tonight, drunk and smoking house cigars. April buttoned her last button as Retro walked by and winked at her, leading one of her regulars by his hand. He was a long-faced man in an out-of-fashion tie, and he was looking hard not at Retro's ass behind her red leather shorts, but at the back of her head, like that's where he wanted to be, in Retro's brain, to see if she thought about him at all. And now her fat banker was at the bar ordering a drink and looking straight ahead at his reflection in the mirror. His 20 was folded tightly into her garter with three others, and Renee was up after this new girl, this skinny redhead, who had taken off everything way too fast, so now the crowd was going to expect some floor action. Now they'd expect her to take them farther, to reach down and open her lips and show them some pink. April was dressed again and ready to work, but her body wasn't moving. She could feel Franny in Tina's office somewhere behind her, her 29-pound daughter a wedge between being herself and being Spring. Tonight she was stuck somewhere between the two, and right now she just wanted to walk through the dark, crowded floor back to the dressing room to her baby. Maybe if she sat with her till she fell asleep, or at least till she had to do her act, it'd be better. She'd be able to see she was okay and finally let go completely into being Spring. Start dancing with no feelings about it either way. Now I'm going to jump to page 251. These kuffar, look at them. They sit at the dirty tables in this dirty hole wearing the short pants that show themselves. They smoke and laugh, and some of them seem frightened of their own police as they are asked one at a time into the front area to be questioned. Soon Bassam will be as well. Twice he has checked his pockets, and three times he has inspected his license to make certain it is the one from Florida, not Virginia, though his part will be activated in Massachusetts, a word he cannot say, only Boston, this he can say. Most of these policemen are young, like him. They believe they are strong, but it would be easy to kill them. He has learned so many ways to do it. hand to hand, knife to gun, gun to bomb. At the camp for training, he was best with small weapons, and there is the feeling he has been given a gift he will never use. Beside his table, two men laugh. On their fingers are the rings of wives. One of them wears a tie and shirt, his sleeves folded back to reveal a gold watch, and he smiles briefly at Bassam, who does not return it, but he nods so as not to incite an argument, so as not to draw attention. A young policeman curls his finger to the businessman, who jokes with the other and rises. Bassam must be permitted to leave soon. There is the drive back to the east. He should be there before sunrise for the first prayer. Amir is in the north now, but each dawn for days the Egyptian has kicked his mattress and Tariq's mattress and the mattress of Imad. The time of living like the Kufar is over. Get up and perform your ablutions, my brothers. We must pray for strength. Prayer is better than sleep. Rise. The Jew owner moves among the tables, grasping his pot of coffee. He sees to the comfort of these people. He wishes to come back again and again. One of the whores, the white one with the red hair, follows with cream and sugar, and Bassam allows the Jew to pour his coffee, though he will no longer touch the cup touched by the Jew. This hatred gives him strength. The hatred that was so pure and clear in the disciplined months in camp. The hatred that began to weaken in Dubai and has weakened further here in this Florida with its heat and all the women who each day show so much of themselves. Amir has moved them to many places. Delray Beach, Boynton Beach, Hollywood, Deerfield, the small rooms smelling of men and incense and the pizza they often eat, the empty boxes stacked upon the floor near the kitchen sink where they would perform their ablutions. But moving so much has kept them united. Bassam and Imad and Tariq like one man now, a shaheed with three heads but one heart, one heart. With Amir, they had enrolled at gymnasiums in each town, places where the Kufar go to keep their bodies as well maintained as the Grand Am and Le Mans and Duster Bassam and his brothers had driven in their old nothingness. At the first one in Venice, because they knew nothing of lifting weights, the gym manager assigned them a young trainer Amir ignored. He did not change into exercise clothing as the others did, but remained dressed in a collared shirt and pressed pants and leather shoes from Germany. He moved from machine to machine, pushing or pulling on whatever handles or bars there were to hold, sweating lightly, not speaking to or even looking at the woman trainer named Kelly who tried to correct him. She was young, the age of Bassam, Tariq, and Imad. Tariq, that habit of never closing his lips fully, which makes him look stupid, though he is not. He stared at her body you could see so easily in its tight gym clothing, her uncovered arms and legs, centimeters of her flat belly, too. And Imad, tall, heavy Imad, who back home had told jokes and laughed, which made everyone else laugh. Since the camps, he has grown quiet. His laughter turned to stone, and he listened to the young trainer talk as if deciding the most efficient way to kill her. But Bassam liked her brown eyes, her brown hair, how she had it tucked up into pins revealing her neck, how she smiled at him and touched his shoulder or arms or back as she instructed him. She was kind. He could see it and feel it. She was kind. As were so many others. Gloria, the real estate woman who found them their first apartment in Delray Beach. She was short and wore very much jewelry and lipstick, but she laughed at whatever she said and looked into Bassam's eyes with hers, blue and smiling, and he felt liked by her, even though she did not know him. It made him want to sit with her, a kafir and a woman, and sip tea and tell her things he had never told to anyone. She asked them their names and tried to pronounce them correctly, though she could not, and she laughed at herself, squeezed his arm, and he could not bear being in her presence any longer. There was Cliff, the man at the fuel station store 3 blocks south. Taller than Bassam, he was as old as his father, his hair colored blonde, his whiskers gray. Upon his arms were inked figures of naked women, and when Bassam came in for more bread or cokes, he asked how his studies were coming. Was he having any goddamn fun? There were the women who served them food in restaurants, the young ones or older ones, the pretty or the ugly. They were polite and smiled while looking them in their eyes, except Amir's. Their smiles changed then. They could see and feel his hatred for them. And Bassam had felt soft and weak and not worthy of the title Shahid. These people should fear him too. He was prepared to do what he was chosen for. They must not doubt this. No one should question this. It had been months since their training, and now he and Tariq and Imad were back home. After the purity of camp, where daily they had fought hand to hand, where they fired the AK-47 while running, where they wired plastic explosives while reciting from Al-Anfal and Al-Tawbah, where they fasted and cleansed themselves, and where their softness fell away like fat from a lamb, it was difficult being once again in the dusty and idle streets of Khamis Mashat. Karim and the others wanted to race, to smoke, to gossip, to stay baboons. Imad and Tariq had grown beards and tried to teach their old friends to stay away from these evils. But Karim, standing before them in his Nike cap and t-shirt and jeans, his shiny cell phone in his hand, he was already lost. For 2 years he had studied in London, something he was always boasting, and he showed them the photograph of the Zionist girl from Jerusalem who had loved him, his mind soiled, his heart falling to the West. Karim told them they should not believe everything the Imam say. Read the Quran, my friends. It says, Al-Kitab, the people of the book, Christians and Jews, deserve respect because they are fellow monotheists. Have you read all the surahs? Because I have. Read 3:113-115. They believe in Allah and the last day. They enjoin what is right and forbid what is wrong, and they hasten in the emulation of all good works. They are in the ranks of the righteous. And that is why they enslave the Palestinians, Tariq said. That is why they occupy our land and kill our brothers in Iraq. You have fucked a Jew. What can you tell us about anything? Go play with your cell phone. You're not going where we're going. Yes, Karim laughed. Have a nice trip. And he turned and walked away, the sun on his back, dust on the soles of his Nike shoes. Soon he would be an unbeliever. And after his death, he would walk the bridge over hell as all souls do. And Bassam could only leave it to the most merciful to spare him from the fall to Jahannam. For Karim and the rest did not know who they were talking to. Shuada, martyrs who would sit in the highest rooms with Allah, men whose names would never be forgotten. Thank you very much. So how are ya? As they say where I'm from. Maybe I should just tell you how this came to be. You know, briefly, after House of Sand and Fog came out, I went back to a novel that I've been trying to write for, I do not exaggerate, 25 years. And I spent another 3 years on it, and once again it just failed the way so many do. I mean, it's normal. I keep telling my writing students that in this creative writing thing, I think probably in the arts in general, and maybe in math and science, I don't know, you're going to fail far more than you'll succeed. And any book I've ever published has really been the phoenix that's risen from the ashes of what didn't work. So anyway, I put that aside. It was clearly not going to happen again. And I had an image in my head. And over the years, I've really come to trust these images in the head. And we all have them. You know, everybody gets an imagination. And we all have these images. And this one wasn't from my life, although it could have been because I was a bartender. I kept seeing cash on a bedroom bureau. And it was an insistent sort of image, so I began to write myself into it. And very soon it became clear this is not the... There were tips, but they weren't the tips of a restaurant worker. They're the tips of a stripper. And then I knew where that image came from. It came from these weird little stories we read right after that terrible day. Where some of these men were seen in strip clubs before the attack. Some of them, actually a few of them in Boston, even hired a call girl the night before. And I couldn't quite figure that out. How could they be so extremist in their interpretation of Islam to do what they did? But honestly, I was more interested in what it might have been like to be a woman who's danced for one of these men. What's it like to have gotten naked for one, maybe even done a sexual favor or two, because that does happen in some of these clubs, for one of these guys. And then after the smoke is cleared, literally and figuratively, what would it be like to have his blood money in your possession? And that gave birth to the book. 5 years later, there you go. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks as we podcast Authors on Tour. This podcast was originally recorded on June 24th, 2008.